All right, let's dive into something a little different today. A case that kind of feels like a legal thriller, you know, full of twists and turns.
Oh, I like where this is going.
So picture this.
Yeah.
1943, right in the middle of World War II.
Okay. Setting the scene.
And you've got this seemingly innocent charitable organization, the Chinese Consolidated Benevolent Association, or CCBA for short.
CCBA, got it.
And they find themselves in a courtroom showdown with the SEC.
Whoa, wait, a charity battling the SEC. That's not something you see everywhere.
Yeah, you'd think, oh, maybe they're accused of embezzling funds or something, right? Typical scandal.
Yeah, makes sense.
But it's way more interesting than that.
All right, now I'm really curious. Lay it on me.
So the CCBA, they were this well-respected group in New York, made up of about 25,000 Chinese members, all dedicated to supporting China and its people during the war.
Okay, noble cause.
Purely charitable, no personal gain involved.
So what's the SEC got to do with this?
Well, their big idea to help, right, was to raise money for the Chinese government
Okay.
by selling bonds.
Bonds, huh? And the SEC got involved
They
because.
went all out, meetings, flyers, newspaper ads, you name it. They did it to get people to buy these bonds.
Wow, that's dedication.
Right. They ended up raising over $600,000.
That's incredible,
Yeah.
especially back then.
Yeah, huge sum. And every penny went straight to a Bank of China branch, which then handled the actual bond purchases. Seems pretty straightforward, right? Act of patriotism, generosity.
Yeah, I mean, on the surface, totally.
But here's where things take a turn. The SEC swoops in, files a lawsuit against the CCBA.
Why?
Their argument: the CCBA, despite their totally good intentions, had accidentally become what's called an underwriter in the eyes of securities law.
An underwriter. How does a charity become an underwriter?
That's the million-dollar
Yeah.
question. It gets even more interesting because the bonds they were selling weren't registered.
Unregistered. Okay, now we're getting into some legal gray areas.
Big time. So we've got this well-respected charity trying to help during a world war, and bam, they're in court with the SEC. Sounds like the setup for a courtroom drama.
Totally.
All right, let's break this down. First, set the scene for us. How did the CCBA actually run this bond drive? What did their operations look like?
So they were very organized, like seriously organized. They held these public meetings, right? And they would appeal to people's sense of duty, their patriotism, you know, urging them to support China in its time of need.
Pulling at the heartstrings.
Exactly. And they didn't just stop there. They'd go door to door, hand out flyers in Chinese communities. They even placed ads in Chinese language newspapers all about these bonds.
Wow, a real grassroots effort.
Totally grassroots. And that's actually part of what landed them in hot water.
Oh, how so?
Well, you see, the Securities Act of 1933 has all these regulations about issuing and selling securities. And even though the CCBA was a charity, their actions kind of fell under those regulations.
Ah, I see. So even though they were doing it for a good cause, they still had to play by the rules of the game. And
Exactly.
those rules, that's where this whole underwriter thing comes into play, right? So break it down for us. What does it mean to be an underwriter, legally speaking? And why was that such a big deal in this case?
So, under the Securities Act, an underwriter is basically anyone who helps distribute securities, especially unregistered ones. And get this, it doesn't matter if they're profiting from it or doing it out of the goodness of their heart.
Wait, hold on. So you're telling me a charity giving up their time and resources could be seen as the same as like a Wall Street investment bank?
That's exactly what was being argued. And
Yeah.
it's a really interesting point, right? Like, is that fair?
Doesn't seem fair at all.
Well, the district court, where the case first went, they actually agreed with that sentiment. They dismissed the SEC's complaint.
They did?
Yeah. They basically said, look, Congress, when they wrote the Securities Act, they couldn't have meant to punish a group like the CCBA. They saw it as purely charitable, outside the scope of the act.
Okay, so a win for common sense.
You'd think so, right? But it doesn't end there.
Oh boy, here comes the twist.
The SEC, they were determined and they appealed the decision.
Oh
And
no.
that's when things really get dramatic. The Second Circuit Court, they overturned the district court's ruling, sided with the SEC.
Wow, a real legal roller coaster. So the CCBA was suddenly on the hook for violating securities law.
It was a big turning point.
What was the Second Circuit's reasoning? Did they think the CCBA was intentionally trying to dodge the law or something?
No, it wasn't about intention. They just looked at the CCBA's actions, you
Yeah.
know, the promoting, the selling of unregistered bonds, and they said, yep, that fits the definition of an underwriter. and that decision. It still affects how we see nonprofits and securities transactions today.
So this is more than just some historical legal curiosity. This has real implications.
Oh, absolutely. It does raise some interesting questions, doesn't it?
Yeah, like how is a group of volunteers with probably zero legal expertise supposed to understand all the ins and outs of securities law? Did they even know they might be breaking the law?
It's a good point. It really highlights this tension that sometimes exists, right? Hmm. Between encouraging people to do good, to be charitable,
yeah,
and the need to protect investors.
Right. A delicate balance.
For sure.
So walk us through the SEC's perspective. Why were they so insistent that the CCBA's actions, even though they were well-intentioned, like why did it require legal action?
Well, the SEC's argument, it all boiled down to investor protection. They believe that anyone who invests deserves access to certain information, like key information, no matter who's selling them the investment.
Okay, I'm following so far.
And this is where the fact that those Chinese government bonds were unregistered, that becomes really important.
Okay, for those of us who aren't legal experts, what does unregistered actually mean in this context, and why was it such a big deal for the SEC?
Okay, so imagine you're thinking about investing in a company, right? You'd probably want to know about their finances, the risks, their past performance.
Yeah, of course. Due diligence.
Exactly. That's where registration comes in. The Securities Act of 1933, it says that before a company, or a government in this case, can offer securities to the public, they need to file this thing called a registration statement with the SEC.
So it's like a background check, but for investments?
Yeah, perfect analogy. Mm-hmm. This statement, it's like a big disclosure document, you know, an investor's guide. It lays out everything about the investment, their financial performance, the potential risks, all that.
So it's all about transparency.
Exactly. Registration makes sure investors know what they're getting into before they risk their money. It's a cornerstone of investor protection.
Makes sense.
And in this case, because those bonds weren't registered, the people who bought them, they were essentially investing blind.
Yeah, I get it. Even if you're donating to a charity, you'd still want to know your money's being used responsibly.
Right.
That there are some safeguards in place.
Right.
And in this case, because the bonds weren't registered, those safeguards were missing.
Right. That's exactly what the SEC was worried about. They were saying, regardless of the CCBA's good intentions, selling those unregistered securities put investors at risk, potentially exposing them to losses.
Right, because they didn't have all the information.
Yeah.
It's like the SEC was saying, it's awesome you want to help, but you got to follow the rules of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But the CCBA, they must have had some defense, right? Did they try to explain that they weren't trying to do anything shady?
Oh, absolutely. And like we said, the district court originally sided with them, focusing on their charitable purpose. But the Second Circuit, they took a much stricter view. In fact, their majority opinion, it had this really powerful statement. They said, and I quote, "It makes no difference as regards the policy of the act, whether an issuer has solicited orders through an agent or has merely taken advantage of the services of a person interested for patriotic reasons in securing offers to buy."
Wow, they didn't hold back. Basically saying good intentions don't excuse you from the law, especially when it comes to protecting investors.
Exactly. And this brings up a key concept in law, particularly with securities, this idea of strict liability.
Strict liability. Now, I've heard that term before, but legal jargon sometimes is right.
Straight over your head.
Totally. Could you break that down for us? What does strict liability actually mean?
Sure. Think of it like this. You're walking down a crowded street and you accidentally bump into someone, right? They spill coffee all over themselves. Even though it was an accident, you didn't mean to do it, you might still be responsible for the damage. That's kind of like strict liability. It focuses on the action itself, regardless of your intent.
So with the CCBA, even though they didn't mean to break the law, the fact that they did the actions of an underwriter made them liable under this strict liability idea.
Precisely. And this concept, it comes up in many areas of law, especially when it comes to protecting the public.
But wait, if strict liability ignores intent, wouldn't that mean someone like sharing a news article about a bond offering could be considered an underwriter?
That is a really sharp question, and it's actually something that came up during this case. One of the judges, Judge Swan, he disagreed with the majority opinion.
A dissenting opinion. Always spices things up.
Right, and his argument gets at exactly what you just brought up.
So what was Judge Swan's take on this whole thing?
Well, he agreed that the SEC had a duty to regulate securities, but he thought the majority's definition of underwriter was way too broad. He worried it would have unintended consequences.
Like catching people who weren't really doing anything wrong.
Exactly. He used a hypothetical in his dissent. Imagine a newspaper. They publish an editorial endorsing a specific bond. Using the majority's logic, Judge Swan said, that newspaper could be labeled an underwriter just for voicing their support.
Okay, yeah, I see his point. That does seem pretty extreme.
Yeah.
Where's the line between free speech and promoting unregistered securities? Did Judge Swan have any alternative ideas? Like, how did you think the case should have been decided?
He felt the court should have looked closer at the relationship between whoever's selling the securities and the issuer. He argued that the CCBA had no formal agreement with the Chinese government. They weren't getting paid any commissions. They were just acting as a channel for donations, driven by their mission to help. So in his view, that shouldn't make them an underwriter.
So we have two very different perspectives here. The majority focusing on investor protection, even if it means a very broad definition of underwriter. And then you have the dissent, worried about overreach and potentially limiting free speech. Fascinating how one case can lead to such different interpretations. But why should our listeners care about this case from over 80 years ago? What makes the CCBA case relevant today?
That is the question, isn't it? And it's something we're going to explore as we dig into the lasting impact of this decision. Because believe it or not, those principles established in the CCBA case, they're still very much alive in today's world, especially with the rise of all these new ways to raise funds and invest. This is where it gets really interesting.
Okay, so we've talked about this historic case, the back and forth, the dissenting opinion, all that. But the big question is, why should any of this matter to our listeners today? Like, how does a case from 1943 about this Chinese Benevolent Association have anything to do with the 21st century?
That's where it all comes together. See, the CCBA case, it didn't just disappear into some law library. It set a precedent, right? A really powerful one that still affects how we approach nonprofits and securities, even today.
So it's not just some, like, legal history lesson.
Nope. This case has real teeth. It basically solidified the idea that even nonprofits, doesn't matter how good their intentions are, they're not exempt from securities laws if their actions make them an underwriter. It's a reminder that good deeds, they don't equal a free pass.
It's like the legal world saying, we appreciate what you're doing, but rules are rules.
Pretty much. And those rules, especially in the world of securities, they're there to protect investors, to keep the market fair.
Okay, so let's get practical. Say I'm part of a nonprofit, right, and we're trying to raise money for a good cause. What are the big takeaways from the CCBA case that we need to keep in mind?
First thing, understand that definition of underwriter, the broad one. Remember, it's not just about contracts or getting paid. It's about what you do. Are you soliciting buyers, promoting securities, making those transactions happen? If so, red flags should be going up.
So basically, knowledge is power. We need to know this stuff so we don't accidentally step over the line.
Right. And speaking of lines, another big one is registration. Make sure any securities you're dealing with, they're registered with the SEC. That way, investors have the info they need to make good decisions.
Now, let's put on our what-if hats for a second. Could the CCBA have done anything differently back then to avoid this whole mess?
Ooh, that's a fun one to think about. Maybe they could have gotten some legal advice, right? Made sure their fundraising was all above board, or maybe explored other ways to raise money that didn't involve these unregistered bonds. Who knows? They could have even tried to get those Chinese government bonds properly registered, although back then that would have been a huge challenge.
It shows how this case, even though it's from so long ago, it still has lessons for today, especially for nonprofits.
For sure. The CCBA case, it boils down to one fundamental truth about securities law, especially here in the U.S. It's all about strict liability. Having good intentions, it doesn't let you off the hook if you break the law.
So the big takeaway for our listeners is awareness and compliance. Even when you're trying to do good, understanding securities law is key. It's not just about avoiding fines. It's about protecting yourself, your organization, and the people you're trying to help.
Couldn't have put it better myself. Knowledge plus a little legal savvy, that's how nonprofits can achieve their goals while staying within the lines. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, everyone. Hope you found it informative and, dare I say, entertaining.